Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk.
Hello.
Hello.
This is our podcast where we got a couple of lesbians, Jamie and Robin, sitting around talking about how to make a baby with science.
Mm-hmm.
And we got kind of like, this is like your after school special episode.
Coming up for you.
It's a little heavier.
Yeah. It's a bit heavier. It deals with, do you want to tell them what it deals with?
Yeah, we're talking about complications in birth. In the birth process. So if anybody of our listeners that are out there that are maybe pregnant, about to go through delivery, you know, you maybe want to listen cautiously.
Or if you're sensitive.
Yeah, if you're sensitive, we just want to give you a little warning that this one's going to get a little heavier.
A little heavier. But it does end up on a positive note.
Sure does.
But it does get into a heavy place.
Yes. So we're going to bring in Sarah and Hillary, and we're going to hear their story. Are you ready, Jamie?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
All right, guys, so our new guests here with us, Sarah and Hillary, are here to talk to us today about their story. And guys, we're going to start where we always start, bum, 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 as Jamie likes to say. What is the elevator pitch about your relationship? And we're going to start with Hillary.
Oh, no. Maybe you should start with Sarah.
We can start with me. That's fine. The elevator pitch, I think maybe it's two. One is we hang out with a lot of straight couples. So sometimes I feel like we're like the token lesbians. Mm-hmm. We also are like this, you know, perfect team that fills each other's gaps. So, you know, Hillary's, you know, the handy and creative one, and I'm the one that takes care of business and the logistical one, and I'm definitely the more social one because Hillary's a little shy. So I guess that's
so it. I shouldn't have started with Hillary.
Exactly. So starting with Hillary is probably the,
way to go, Robin.
Good job, yeah. Robin. Okay, that was a sweet sweet elevator pitch.
That's really nice.
Try to be sweet.
I guess going to say the same kind of thing. Uh-huh. Sarah's definitely the more outgoing, and I am quite introverted, so this is all a little scary.
I'll ask all the questions to you then, Hillary.
Okay, yes. Great.
Well, we'll take the heat off you.
Yeah.
We'll take the heat off you on the relationship front.
Yeah.
We're going to jump in on your fertility story. So you guys had, from my top line understanding, quite a journey.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
So we wanted to start a little bit. I believe you had some issues or how you chose the sperm donor and how that all went. Do you want to start there with your process?
Yeah, I'll start since I'm the more outgoing one.
Like who's having the babies? Like walk us
through. Yeah, it was really easy for us, fortunately, because like I said before, we fill each other's gaps. So it was an easy decision. I didn't necessarily want to be pregnant. Hillary felt a very strong desire to be pregnant. I wanted to pass along my genealogy, and Hillary did not have a desire to pass along her gene. Not that she didn't have a desire, but not a strong desire. So it was just an easy you know, solution to harvest my eggs, implant them into Hillary's womb. That way we would both have a physical connection to the child, which is very important to us. So who would be pregnant and how would we get pregnant was a very easy decision. It took about 5 seconds.
And that's very interesting because you're the first couple that we've talked to that has done it this route.
Mary and I were going to do it that route and we bailed.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, it's definitely the hardest way you could possibly do it.
That's why
for
we
two
bailed.
Women. Yeah. It's called, it's expensive. It's called reciprocal IVF. But that's, you know, that was the way we wanted to do it. So we went along that path.
I did a lot of research online. I mean, I've been wanting to do this my whole life and I started researching in college actually long before.
You wanted to make a baby by science your whole life?
Or yeah.
Well, that's amazing.
She knew she was going to have to.
I knew I was going to be with a woman and that was impossible any other way. So, I started researching really early on.
Wow.
And I found a book when I was in college that was all about
in college? This is unbelievable.
She's been buying baby clothes since she was about 17 years old.
But so like on the first date, you were like, so babies.
You have always wanted to be a mother.
I've always wanted to be a mother.
Even though you knew you were gay.
Yeah.
And you were never deterred by that.
I was never deterred by it. I actually, I mean, I had the fortunate experience growing up. My mother was surrounded by a community of gay people, which was really lovely, some of which had children. I had never seen a lesbian couple go through this, but I knew that it wasn't impossible to have children.
So you had already had exposure to gay people having kids growing up.
Yes, I did.
Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 36.
Okay. Well, that might be part of the reason.
Yeah,
but
she's younger. So you're a little younger. But when you started this process, you were, this was a while ago.
Yeah.
So, that's just, that's
how, how many years ago was it when you started the process?
Well, when we started the process, it
your
was...
Your process, your research.
Oh, my research you're talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, well, I was probably 20 when I really started to think about how I wanted to do it someday.
And, wow, you were like a go-getter.
You ordering books, you know, ordering some research books. I worked at a bookstore at the time, so I had a lot of resources at my fingertips.
But our process together started in 2012. Like that was our first consultation. Yeah.
Was it 5 years ago?
Yeah, 2012.
Was it? Jamie's not so much at the math.
It was 2012 because I remember it was just a few days after we were legally married, which is 2012.
I feel like we started our journeys around the same time.
Yes.
So I guess it was for us 5 years ago too. Yeah.
It's crazy how fast
it goes by.
We'd like to take a moment to remind you that Jamie's pregnant and has pregnancy brain.
And there's heavy breathing. It just happens.
Okay, so you're the book orderer, you're the researcher, and you were like, this is the route we're going to go. I found a clinic. What was the website again?
It's called It's Conceivable, and it's set up for, you know, gay families that are interested in conceiving, in the actual process of conceiving a child. It's not, I mean, they have adoption resources, and, you know, it's all about making your family, but it's mostly for couples who want to conceive.
Okay. So you found your doctor, and you guys did a consultation, and at that point, as you said, you already know what you want to do.
Yes. Okay. And initially, we wanted a known donor. We had a friend of ours who had donated sperm to a lesbian couple that he knew from high school. They have a lovely family dynamic. And so, you know, he's their father and they live in separate states, but they, you know, they're part of each other's lives and it's lovely. And we wanted something of that.
What appealed to you about that?
Just that our child would know his biological or her biological father. And, you know, those are sometimes hard questions as the child gets older. And, you know, I worried that the child not knowing who this other person who helped create them would be upset about it in some way, shape, or form. So
yeah,
I thought,
we
well,
never wanted them to feel like they were missing out necessarily on some aspect of, you know, parenthood, I guess, parental figures.
Yeah, so we thought maybe that's the way to go. Then we have this person in our lives and in our child's lives, and you know, we thought we could create that lovely dynamic. Although it's tricky, and our doctor warned us, you know, this is tricky. And at that time, our marriage.
Why did they say it was tricky?
Just the legality of it.
Oh,
and
right.
Also, you know,
did you draw plans and all that business?
We didn't get that far.
You didn't get that far.
That was a complicated process in and of itself.
Well, walk us through that process because we haven't had anyone talk about that yet. So, like, you have to say, hey, you want to make a baby with us?
Yeah, it was a very close friend.
Well,
of Hillary's.
Yeah, I had a longtime friend from graduate school. When I was out in Arizona, and he and I were super, super close, like best friends. And he was also gay and wanted to parent a child, but not necessarily be 100% involved. It was something that he definitely wanted to do. And so just we started kidding about it at first. Like we'd go out to the bar and I'd say, hey, let's see, why don't you be my baby daddy? And, you know, it was kind of a joke, but then it evolved and
I
became
had a couple
like,
of those conversations.
Yeah. But we were both so serious about doing it in our future that it kind of evolved into a well, what if we actually did this? You know, mm-hmm. maybe we could actually do this and make it work. And we were sort of on the same trajectory in our lives. He was moving to New York around the same time I did. Mm-hmm. We remained really close when he moved here and then when I got here. And it became an actually serious discussion mm-hmm. that we started to have.
And were you two already together at this point?
No.
No.
We weren't. We hadn't met.
I'm just so fascinated. Like, yeah. You were just planning. Like, you were going to be a mom no matter what.
Yeah.
Do you feel this strongly about everything?
No.
Just this one thing.
Just all right.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I knew this was like a major thing in my life.
Sure.
That I had to do.
But what's really interesting to me, too, and I'm backtracking here, is that mm-hmm. you knew you wanted to be a mom, but you were like, I don't really care if it's my genes. I just.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so fascinating.
To me, yes. That's like the best part, I think. You know, it's like one of the most appealing factors. It was like passing along a part of you. And you know, for me, it was, I wanted to take this child and, you know, make them the best that they could be and everything that I didn't have or things that I did mm-hmm. that I didn't want, like try to fix all of that. Mm-hmm. Terrible, maybe.
We're all trying to fix it all.
Yeah, but I just kind of, you know, like it's this little me that I could just help shape through the world. That it's still a little Hillary, but I
understand because like Anne had our first child, mm-hmm. and that bond is really strong. As Hillary, you know, mm-hmm. it's like I am her mother, mm-hmm. But I still my desire to have my genetics passed along never left.
Yeah. It's so funny. Like I had both of our kids uh-huh. and I almost didn't care about that. Like, I mean, it's like, I would have been like, if we could have weeded out some of my big girl German stock, I would have been thrilled about that.
But, that's kind of how I felt too. I was like, I don't need to, I don't necessarily need to carry on some of those genes and I'm happy to leave some of those behind.
Like every alcoholic in my family, it'd be great if they weren't, you know, part of the gene pool.
Exactly.
Okay. So you and... you and your friend have now said, we think we're going to do this.
Yes.
Well, her and her friend, I mean, I think it was joking with you and your friend, but I think when we started talking about having children, then it was like, okay, we want to do a known donor. Where's the short list? And, mm-hmm. you know, he was obviously at the top of it. So then that's, you know, when we had the real conversation mm-hmm. of, okay, we're going to have a child and we'd like you to be a part of it.
And so what were the steps you have to go through for that?
And he was on board.
He was on board. Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't even remember when we approached him about it, but it was very casually one night when we were hanging out and, you know, we said we finally gotten to a place where, and, you know, he had come to know Sarah quite well and we were all friends and had been hanging out for a long time. And I don't remember exactly how it went down, but anyway,
I remember you talked to him. You guys were out without me, and you had the conversation.
Oh, okay.
And he, you know, you were like, think about it, blah blah blah. And he just said, I think I want to do it, but obviously I want to think about it. He needed to talk to his boyfriend at the time,
right? You know, yeah, he was partnered up at the time, so
he was kind of like, I think I want to do this, but I just mm-hmm. you know, I need some time, obviously. And it didn't take that much time. So we went back to our fertility clinic, and they said, you know what, we'll do it here.
Okay.
We'll take it here and mm-hmm. we'll quarantine it and we'll handle it. Unfortunately, when he went to donate his sperm, our doctor said, you know what, this is probably not the right sperm. It's not going to
like work low out motility.
He had low counts kind of in all categories because they break it down into four different categories.
Using this sperm,
especially because of IVF, like you want to maximize your chances.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want to mm-hmm. spend all the money and go through the whole process.
Oh my God, how heartbreaking.
When we got those results back, we finally had to just make a decision and say, this isn't going to work out. And it was heartbreaking for all of us. I think more so for him at that point than for us, because we were ready to just move on and do what it needed to take to, you know,
start our family.
Sorry for that guy.
That guy.
It's too bad. Right. So then we started the process of looking for an anonymous donor.
And you went to mm-hmm. like a bank?
We went to a large bank. And
that was an easy decision. So you went from known donor to anonymous donor, like...
Kind of. I mean, we had those few months in between to prep for it. We knew we have to start thinking about this other possibility. And Hillary was fantastic about doing all this research.
I was just going to say.
She was the one. I was like, oh my God, this is so overwhelming. And she like had this binder and like, you know, weeded out her favorites. And I was like, talk to me when you've narrowed it down to like five or six. I mean, she looked through the hundreds. She was amazing. So she found her kind of top five or six choices. And then I got into the picture.
When we finally picked a donor, we went back to our clinic and we inseminated. We did the egg harvest and
I had a bad cycle.
Eggs from Sarah.
You had a bad cycle.
So what does that mean?
We harvested twice. So we went in to harvest And I just, you know, when we did the initial consultation, she, you know, looked at my ovaries and was like, you have the ovaries of a 25-year-old. And I was 37 at the time. And I was like, woohoo, because I was expecting me to not have a high egg count. But my egg count was actually better than Hillary's, who was 5 years younger. That's so she was like, great, you have all these ovaries. So when we're ready, so...
Eggs.
Eggs. Sorry, I have ovaries and eggs. You have all these eggs. So when we actually went through the process and harvested the eggs, we only got 15 eggs, which sounded like a lot at the time.
That's a lot. Like
a but it wasn't what we were expecting.
Quality.
But they weren't very good quality. Yeah. So when we fertilized them, only three made it to day three, and the embryos were not quality. So we did a 3-day implantation instead of a 5-day.
Mm-hmm. And so you're already feeling like maybe.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You're hopeful.
But hopeful with
we did three. We put three in for Anne, and then two at the times for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah,
and
you're hopeful. It's
hopeful.
It's your first
we're like three. Yeah. So one of them's got to take, but none of them took, and that was heartbreaking. And I think what Hillary was about to say was, after that cycle, the doctor had said, actually, this sperm is not as healthy as we would have wanted it from a bank.
Even being from a bank where they have standards.
And it was good.
And they won't, you know, send it out if it's not above a certain standard. And actually, the bank that we used had a sort of a
threshold level.
A threshold level that they talked about on the website. And they said, if for some reason you get a vial that's not up to this quality,
like 10 million
contact
per
us back.
I think
it's like 10 to 12 million.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And so we actually went back to the clinic and they refunded us.
We got a refund.
We got a refund for that vial. So the original one that didn't have a good count, we were like, okay, his quality isn't as good, so we need to find a new donor. And she said, in the event that you find another donor that has bad quality like the first one, you should have a backup.
Mm-hmm. So we had choice A and choice B.
And you had to have them both shipped to the clinic.
Yes.
Yeah.
So not only did we have to go back to the drawing board again and start searching through donor profiles.
So annoying.
A third time, you know, basically a third time, we had to do it a fourth time to get the backup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you've got your known donor, you've got your new known donor, you got your backup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're going to do another cycle. What happens?
So we get married.
Like you do.
Go on a honeymoon. And then we come back and decide we're going to try again. So I go through.
I got pregnant on the honeymoon. It was like the weirdest thing.
Oh, no. So we came back and from our honeymoon and we started a new cycle harvesting my eggs.
And we didn't ask you about this. Meds. You took meds.
Yes. So
and
we both had to be cycling together, right?
Sort of. What they do for the receiving partners, they completely shut your hormones down entirely.
It's called medical menopause.
Yes. They basically put me through menopause. It was fun.
Hot at lashes like and 30 all. Years old.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But once my system is shut down, then I'm basically at, you know, there's no waiting to be on the same cycle because system was prepped and ready to go.
Okay. So they shut down her cycle so they can control it manually, basically by medicine. Yeah. So she was taking estrogen.
The natural hormones.
Yeah. So her natural stuff was shut down because obviously they didn't want like her fallopian tubes and ovaries and eggs getting in the way. Mm-hmm. So they shut it all down and she had to take estrogen pills 3 times a day.
Sure.
While I started shots in the belly. Every day.
I bet it was super fun in your house at that time.
It was so great. Yeah. No, we actually...
It was actually
not
traumatic at all. It was actually... we were very on board for this.
We were excited.
We knew what we were getting into.
So we did shots in the belly for the second time now for me for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it was looking so much better. So I remember distinctly going back for the second cycle appointment and she did the ultrasound. And she was like, what'd you do? Grow some eggs? Because all of a sudden my ovaries were full of eggs. The second cycle, I got 27 eggs.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So that was what she was expecting the first time.
Right. Did they like congratulate you when you woke up?
She said, do you want to be a donor? That's exactly what she said.
That's amazing.
When I woke up. Yeah. I was.
Did you donate any of them?
I would have. I said, nobody's going to want these old lady eggs. I'm 37
actually,
years old.
I think they have a legal cutoff of 30 or something.
35.
For egg donation.
Yeah.
It's good cash in that, though. I feel like they pay like 15, 20 grand.
You know what? I would have done it just to help people. Yeah. But I think nobody's going to want these 37-year-old eggs.
It's just all about helping people. I'm like 15, 20 grand. Yeah.
So you get 27 eggs.
Yes.
They're ready to be fertilized.
Yep.
They fertilize the eggs. They put them in the petri dish.
14 perfect embryos is what we got.
14 perfect high grade, like grade A.
Wow.
Yes, very exciting.
Good sperm.
Good sperm, good eggs, very exciting.
Now, so how many did they put in?
2.
Yeah.
And drum roll, did you get pregnant?
Drum roll,
we did. We got pregnant. We were very excited. We got a girl, which is what we wanted.
We got a girl.
We got a girl. Yes, we wanted a girl. I don't know why. We just wanted a girl. You know, I always wanted a boy at first, and then we were out with friends. We were taking two of our friends' sons out. They were probably 5 or 6 at the time, and they were like eating ice cream and spitting it out, spitting at each other. And I'm like, ugh, gross. I don't want boys. I want a girl. So
girls do that too.
Yeah, I guess so. Yes, I think it's just a kid thing. So
mostly your girl.
Maybe it's just my girl.
My girl just twirls. Yeah.
So we got a girl, and Hillary had like the easiest pregnancy ever.
I did. It was
like 1 hour of morning sickness.
Really, yeah. Very easy in the beginning. I didn't have really any symptoms.
Amazing.
Side effects.
We wanted a midwife. Hillary felt very strongly about a midwife, so we went to midwives that had
instead of a doctor in a hospital?
Instead of a doctor. But
we're going to do it at home?
No, not at home.
We don't go.
We just went to a midwife practice, which was part of an OBGYN practice, just that they happened to have a section that was all midwives mm-hmm. who had access. Mainly the reason we decided to use them was because we wanted to have a natural birth at the birthing center.
At St. Luke's.
In a hospital. Right, yes. Sure.
So we're in a hospital, so we're should one floor happen. Away if something yes. goes down, but we're, you know, in an environment center. Where they're not going to push drugs and push
with
C-sections on us.
The Mosu ball and the hanging bar.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
All the amenities and the hot tubs.
I understand.
And
the only amenity I care about is called the thing that makes the pain stop.
Right.
You can put every ball and bar in there. I'm like, no, thank you.
You've been through it twice.
Yeah.
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 So I did a lot of research again, and maybe too much.
But you already knew how you wanted this to go down when you
were
like 10. So.
I did, yeah.
She made me watch The Business of Being Born. Which is all about you
150
know, how the
times.
Medical society in this country is always pushing C-sections, trying to stay on doctor's schedules, and women's bodies know what they need to do, and there's too much medicine and all of that. So we were trying to, you know, not have that influence and try to stay with a midwife and be as natural as possible, but also be surrounded by medicine if we needed it.
Sure.
Did you read Ina Mae Gaskin's?
Yes, I did.
You read Ina Mae Gaskin? Yes.
We signed up for a birthing class, for a Bradley Method birthing class that was all natural birth based.
This is all called Things I Would Never Do. For $500.
I'm like in the middle of Robin and the two of you.
So the rest of my pregnancy went pretty smoothly right up until the very end. I went 2 weeks overdue, first baby.
Wow.
It's typical, happens a lot. And this is where the story shifts.
Yeah.
I was 2 weeks overdue and the baby was not interested in coming. And we started taking measures to speed the process along as much as you can speed the process along. I went in for an appointment and they scraped my membranes where they kind of tug a little at your uterine lining
strip the membranes.
That's right, strip the membranes.
We're having non-stress tests where we would go in once a week and they would put a heart monitor on the baby and record it for 20 minutes just to make sure
and
there were no dips.
And this was only in the 2 weeks past or this was the whole pregnancy?
We started that
at week
a 36, little earlier.
I think. Yeah. I think at week 36 they started doing non-stress tests.
Is that like a midwife thing?
I think a doctor would not do that. I think a doctor would probably do ultrasounds.
Yeah,
yes, we do.
And midwives don't do ultrasounds very often, so they were doing
any ultrasounds for this pregnancy?
We did.
You did?
We had a couple early
a couple.
On, yeah. And everything was looking fine and perfect. And I don't remember why they did the non-stress test, but maybe it was just...
I think it was just what...
Maybe that's just
the standard
part of the course,
36
yeah.
weeks. That's what they start to do, and just to monitor the baby.
Were they alarmed that you were 2 weeks overdue?
No. We were.
No, I was. I was also very uncomfortable at that point.
I'm sure.
And,
and was the baby
just ready.
Shifting? Or
the baby
like
was turned down.
Turn?
Baby was turned. Yeah, she was all ready. We were ready to go. I mean, we were just in a waiting period, and we were trying everything.
A lot
spicy
of walks.
Food, walks, everything. You know, all
acupuncture.
The...
Acupuncture.
Yeah, I did try acupuncture. And then...
You went into labor.
I went into labor one morning, and...
Naturally, basically.
Naturally.
We had gone in for a non-stress test on Friday, and they said, okay, on Monday, you should have a sonogram.
Yeah, if the baby doesn't come this weekend, you will go in on Monday and have an ultrasound where we're going to look at your fluid.
Sure, and all that
check
stuff.
Check out the baby and make sure everything's still good.
She went into labor Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have to say here, before we go any further, I had an experience with the midwives that I was using where there was sort of a disconnect between their normal process with straight couples and our process because they were basing the timeline of our pregnancy on...
Right.
Their clock that they use, which relates to your last period.
Yeah.
Right.
Which wasn't accurate.
Didn't, Yeah, it was not accurate for us, like, because we knew the exact minute that
of conception. Mm-hmm. We knew conception date.
And so we had a little bit of an argument with them early on where I was saying, no, we actually know it was this date. It was, you know, this date right here. So our due date is actually June 11th.
Not June 14th.
Not June 14th or 20th or whatever they...
So you were even later.
They were estimating. Yes. So they were saying and your week and half standards, overdue. They we were saying
weren't it was 2 weeks. About it, but I was like, no, we know the exact date. And so now I'm getting a little more on edge about the whole
and
2 weeks behind.
And that's not a good place to be in when you're about to give birth.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now. Did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's Feather snapcam.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So I went into labor naturally over the weekend on Saturday, and I had a not typical labor. We had hired a doula to be with us, mm-hmm. and according to her, everything looked like it was moving along and progressing fine, but the baby had sort of shifted in the last week, I would say, and she was transverse, which still head down, but transverse.
Flipped on the back.
Which is butt out or butt in. I can't remember which direction transverse means. But so she was in a non-optimal position for birth. Coming out, which tends to slow the process down.
And you labored at home.
I labored at home.
Very long time.
Part of our process was, you know, wanting to use the birthing center. And if you arrive at the birthing center too soon, you have a limited window of time before they, you know, to labor,
before they shift you to the
regular labor and delivery ward, which is, this is a huge thing that women, I think, need to consider and think about when they're giving birth now. And there's a lot of fear, I think, surrounding that, especially for me at the time. I didn't want to be forced into those timelines. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I also was really adamant about having a natural birth at the time. So we labored at home with a doula, and that's partly why we got a doula, was so that we had a professional, sure. you know, a birthing professional with us who was there to tell us if everything was moving along on mm-hmm. track and seemed like it was going well. And that way that person could assess the situation and say, okay, now is the time. Let's move to the hospital. I felt like something was maybe a little wrong right from the start, from the onset of my labor, because my labor just, you know, we had taken all these classes and they were telling us your labor's going to look like this. You're going to hit the first stage. It's mm-hmm. going to go like this. You're going to be comfortable. You're going to be talking, maybe a little bit of pain, but you can probably still go out for walks, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. The second stage, you're going to know that labor's advancing. You're going to start to talk less. You're not going to be able to speak through the pain. And they, you know, they just laid it, they mapped it out in this very specific way.
And but you said you knew there was something wrong because...
I didn't know there was something wrong, but I felt like this isn't... I felt uncomfortable because I knew this wasn't what we had been told. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, this isn't following the pattern that anybody has said.
And it's
following.
Really intense.
And it was intense.
And it's lasting a long time.
Yes. And they were coming, they would spread out for a while and then they would come really close together and be on top of each other. Mm-hmm. And it was just very erratic. And yet we had this doula who has attended over 100 births with us. And she was saying, you know what? It's because the baby's transverse. This is... trust me, I've seen this 100 times. This is common. Like, this is typical labor. And so we continued to labor at home. And I mean, it was almost 20 hours that I was laboring at home.
That's hard labor.
A lot of pain. Yeah. I mean, a lot of it was a blur. But one of the things that was also, we were talking to my midwife on the phone too. She was calling in and checking up on me and having conversations on the phone and getting on the phone with my doula, and we were all talking. And one of the things that I think they were judging my situation on was based on the fact that I was still communicating very clearly with them.
It's the dumbest question ever.
The pain.
Dumb. Like, yeah. Can you still talk?
Exactly.
I was like, I can always talk.
Yeah.
That doesn't tell me if I should come in.
And I have a very high pain threshold, mm-hmm. so I was working through it.
You're tough.
Well, at the time. So, you know, I have to say, that's not a good judge for everyone out there. Like, yeah. That's, please don't use that as a basis for trusting in your own body and what's happening. Mm-hmm.
What were they waiting for?
I think they were waiting for signs that I was more advanced.
More dilated.
More dilated.
Because my dilation was going very slow. And you're not a certain amount of dilation, they'll send you home.
Unless your water has broken.
Unless your water is broken.
And your water
had not broken. And my water had not broken.
Well, they discourage you. I mean, I went. Yeah. They were like, you can stay, but it's going to be a lot of walking around this hallway. So I went home and
exactly.
came back.
Yeah. So we got to the hospital around midnight, and they checked her dilation, 7 centimeters, exactly what we wanted to be.
Oh, so you waited for the dilation.
We waited for the dilation.
Well, I waited until my doula noticed some signs in me that she thought were important. I felt like I had an urge to push, or a very strong urge to poop. Either way, it was an urge to push. And she was like, "If that's what you're feeling,
let's go.
We need to go.
You still though were like adamant, no pain meds, no.
I mean, at that point, I had been going through it for so long. I didn't.
You didn't know which
it wasn't
way was
even
up.
On my radar. Yeah, I didn't know which way was up. I was
so
in such a fog.
Did you go to the hospital or to the?
We went to the hospital to the labor and delivery ward.
Okay. Because we were so overdue, we had timed out of the birth center. So we were going to have to go to labor and delivery anyway.
Okay.
No matter what.
Okay. So you went directly there.
Went directly there. They checked her dilation, 7 centimeters, and then they checked the heartbeat. And there wasn't one.
Yeah, we found out that our baby had died.
So obviously the worst possible thing that could ever happen to anybody happened to us in that moment.
It's terrible.
It was awful. We immediately...
Because you haven't even delivered yet.
We haven't even delivered. So they immediately... I mean, we couldn't find it on the monitor. They came back with the ultrasound. I'll never forget the man's face. He didn't want to tell us, and he just looked at my midwife and shook his head and left. And a real doctor had to come and actually tell us the news.
Well,
but
she
our
told
midwife
I mean, she,
told us
she,
in between.
Yeah, she just turned and said, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And that was it.
The midwife came back, or not the midwife, the real doctor came back and actually confirmed it, but we already knew. And at that point, our doula said, can we get her with, I'm so lost at the moment, whatever it is that kills the pain.
an epidural.
An epidural.
And
she said, can we get an epidural? Let's get an epidural now. Like, there's no reason for her to endure any more pain. So they immediately came and did an epidural.
And that moment,
surprised
they
didn't do a C-section.
Right.
Well, interesting.
It was. I asked for at one point,
and they said no.
And they said, with everything that you're going to go through now, and everything you've already been through, your body,
it's
best
is
for your
prepped
body.
And ready, and you're going to have less of a recovery period and a scar that's going to always remind you of this.
Right. Well, there are internal scars anyway. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, it took another 14 hours for family to come. So. They gave her an epidural. They gave her Pitocin. We finally were able to get a little bit of sleep while she was not in pain. And then we got to the stage where it seemed like it was time to push, and it took 5.5 hours of pushing. And they brought in a doctor along with our midwife to try, you know, every medical help to get her out. You know, normally when a baby is still alive, the baby helps to push itself out of Molly's body, but Finley was unable to do that. So it was forceps, it was vacuum, it was episiotomy.
It was every
intense.
Single thing.
Everything.
Didn't
every
want.
Intervention
everything
that we didn't want, I have now had. And I have a very different outlook now after the whole experience.
And when, like, take us back to, like, when you first heard that there was no heartbeat. Like, this is not on your radar at all.
Not at
this
all.
Is
this
like
was
never in my life.
Never
did I think
in my life
that
I think that this was ever even a possibility.
Because we don't think that really happens much in the United States.
And doctors don't talk about it.
It happens more often than people know. Yeah, one in every 160 babies are stillborn. That's more common than Down syndrome.
And
they
do
test
all
for
of this
Down
testing
syndrome twice,
for Down syndrome
at least
and for
in
these
pregnancy.
Preventative, you know. Birth defects, but they don't talk about this.
Are you mourning at this point? I mean, at this point,
I was in such a state of shock, and my body was so tired. Shock is what it was.
I can't even imagine how you, total shock.
I kept thinking, wake up, please wake up. This has got to be a dream. Yeah.
I mean,
not
you were physically ill.
I threw up,
and I mean, we were just in, our bodies were just in such a state of shock.
I'm sure. And your midwife.
And our midwife was devastated, and
lovely. I mean, the care that we received,
she did everything she could in the moment to comfort us. But it was
you can't
and
really
your
be
doula
comforted.
Too.
Doula
yeah,
was great.
Both of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was.
So and then you just had to stay in the hospital for a couple of days. I mean, like what?
It did. I also had every intervention, and then my body, I think, from the shock of everything, had some major. Problems. After
well, her
delivery
placenta did
complications.
Detach.
So I had some delivery
so
complications.
So we got Finley out, and obviously, when Finley came out, we were just screaming and pain and sadness. And little did we know that the doctor was standing there waiting for this placenta to come out, and it wouldn't come out. So that's an issue.
So they have to do surgery? That can kill you, can't it?
Can it? Kill
it
you.
Can, yeah.
It
I can mean, I was hemorrhaging. They weren't telling us at the time, but I was hemorrhaging.
And you're holding her.
No, we hadn't done that yet.
We hadn't held her yet. They did ask us at first, do you want to hold her immediately, or should we bring her back? And I didn't think that I could in the moment. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, you're making all of these decisions on the fly.
You
can't prepare
for you.
You have no idea
what's
going on. Your
emotional outlook in this event. So I didn't know how I was going to react when I saw her. So I said, no, I don't want to see her right away.
We held each other.
I can't hold her right away. And they whisked her off. And I knew that I wanted to hold her. I just didn't think I was going to be able to in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I could have in that moment.
So the concern with the placenta was obviously they wanted to go and do a DNC to get the placenta out.
So,
but
yeah.
They knew that post-DNC, then you recover an anesthesia, which is not private. And we hadn't had a chance to hold Finley yet. So we had this dilemma, and
it was going to lengthen the time period that we wouldn't, you know, we weren't going to be able to see her for a longer stretch of time if I had this procedure.
So they tried to remove the placenta manually. They tried, but they couldn't get all the placenta out. So they still had to do a DNC. But the anesthesiologist was amazing, and
I said, just give me the local anesthesia, and I want to be awake.
So, and he said, you can come back to this room. You know, you don't have to go to anesthesia recovery. He was lovely and said, I'll do whatever you need to do to, you know, take care of whatever you need to take care of. So they did the DNC. They brought us back to the delivery room. And that's when we had the time with Finley and were able to hold her.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, my body was still in a state of shock and very, very, very unstable. And my blood pressure dropped significantly at that time.
They were giving her medicine, and it wasn't.
It's basically a state of shock. My blood pressure dropped, like plummeted. Yeah, it had been through a trauma, and I started freezing. I was freezing. I was like shaking, and they just bundled me in blankets, and they were trying to get my blood pressure up. But, you know, my mom. I'll never forget my mom saying to the doctor. My mom was there with us the whole time.
Hillary's blood pressure dropped to 60/40, and I'm not a medical person. I don't necessarily know what that means. I know it's not good, It was Hillary's mom that said, you guys, you need to give her some more medicine because it's not rising.
And she said, I can't lose her too. Yeah. And that was very much like the feeling in the room was that this was very sensitive. And they started talking about blood transfusions. And I was like, if we can avoid it, please let's do everything you can before we get there. Because my body's in such a state of turmoil right now. I don't want to introduce one more thing that might put it into more turmoil, like having to accept a foreign person's blood, you know. So sure. But you're making all of these decisions in this 100% state of shock and hoping you're making the right ones and trying to just figure out how you're going to put your foot in front of the other in the next moment, you know.
So you stay in the hospital. Your mom is there. Mm-hmm. Sarah, you have to go home. They don't. Do they let you stay there?
They let me stay. They moved us to another floor. And it wasn't a private room, but they didn't put anybody else in the room and they didn't tell me to leave. So I was able to stay there with her for 2 days.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's
it was something. Very nice. The whole staff at the hospital.
Thank God you had such a human experience with the staff.
Yes. They were so lovely and they came in every morning with just this tender heart and, you know, just said, I'm so sorry for your loss. Is there anything I can do for you? And they were very caring with us and, my mom flew in the next day and, you know, we had family and friends around us, which was great. Mm-hmm.
Just something you think will happen.
Imagine the recovery time for that, not physically but emotionally, must have been a while.
A long emotional time. I mean, recovery. We're 3 years out and it's still...
How many years? Three
every day.
It doesn't go away.
It doesn't go away. It never will.
And people don't know how to understand that. It's different from a miscarriage. It's different.
It's different. I mean, I'm not discounting miscarriages there. I'm sure I've
it's
never
tragic,
had one, but
no
it's tragic. No matter what, it's tragic.
But baby and you lose
they're different experiences.
It's tragic, but...
Mm-hmm. And did the doctors have any theories for what happened? Or
they did. When she came out, it was clear that the cord was wrapped tightly around her wrist, and she had been in the birth canal so long, the cord was between her wrist and her face. And
somehow her hand had gotten lodged up by her head, which was one of the reasons I think it was so hard for her to come out. Normally, you're just dealing with the head, but it was her hand and her head. And because the cord was wrapped around her hand, the cord got pinched between her hand and her head.
So was that, I don't know, did that information help you in any way, or was it harder because of it? Like, do you wish you had done anything different? I hope you know I mean that in the...
No, absolutely. No, I mean, it's something that we've gone back to 100 times over since this happened to us. And, of course, I would do everything differently knowing what I know now.
I'm glad that I know what happened. I think it would have been harder because there are babies that are stillborn and they just don't know.
No idea.
Yeah, they don't know. And that would have been hard for me. And in a sense, it is a little bit harder to know and therefore know how to prevent it.
Sure.
So the what ifs always come up.
That's a good point.
You don't know if you could have prevented
but,
this.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I always come back to is we should have gone to the hospital sooner. But, you know, like you can live your whole life that way going, oh, if I'd have done this, then, you know,
X would happen. Who knows
when it happened?
It could have happened early on.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you have all these people telling you, no, you're fine, fine.
Yeah, and medical professionals all over telling us everything's fine. You know, women do this every day, and they do, and that's the hard thing to reconcile. Is they do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just this happened to us. You know.
Yeah.
Can I ask how long was it before you tried again? I mean, did you need time? Like, what?
I wanted to start immediately.
I felt such an absence after sharing this bond with this person inside of me for so long. Mm-hmm. I felt so empty. I mean, in every sense of the word, empty.
Well, we were still in the hospital. I actually called our fertility doctor just to let her know the news. Yeah. And she was, she's amazing. And she took her residency at this hospital. And so she knew the doctor that had ended up delivering Finley. And she called her immediately to get, you know, Hillary's health status and called in immediately a prescription for estrogen. She called me back and said, I want to get her lining back up and she needs to start taking estrogen.
And apparently estrogen is a helpful way to recover a uterus that's been through some trauma.
Oh, so she immediately
can help
started
build it back up
helping us for the next one, like the next day.
Wow. Yeah.
So you guys,
she got involved.
Make decisions, huh?
I mean,
But
decisions on the fly.
If
you
there's
know,
anything, as we said, is you guys knew you wanted a baby and you were going to go forward.
Yeah. And absolutely. I mean, this was, there were moments where this absolutely deterred me, and I thought, I can't go through this again. I can't. There's no way.
No. We're done. We can't.
Yeah. And knowing that we were going to have to do it all over again. Mm-hmm. I mean, 9 months is not... Looking back in hindsight, it's a short amount of time, but when you're in it, it feels like forever.
Trust me, it feels like forever.
Even when nothing goes wrong, it feels like forever.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And so to lose that on the very last day, the very day you thought you were going to bring a baby home is... emptiness that you feel and the desire to now make it happen was so huge.
Mm-hmm. Maybe to try to help heal as well.
Yes, it was the only thing I think that was going to heal me. I can't speak for you, but it was the only thing that was going to heal me.
Did the universe give you an easy second pregnancy?
It did take, so we had Finley in June. We didn't implant the embryo for our son until beginning of February. So
and you still had leftover eggs from
we
your 27.
We still had 12 leftover. Eggs. Well, only 14 turned into embryos, so we still had 12 perfect embryos. And we implanted two more embryos, and we got pregnant again. Mm-hmm. Lovely. We thought we were going to get two, and we kind of hoped for two.
Right.
But we only got one.
Did you get support during
we
it?
We did. Yes. We had a lot of support. Immediately after the loss of our daughter, we started going to a counseling therapist group that specializes in women who have lost babies and women who are struggling with postpartum depression, anything mm-hmm. surrounding motherhood and birth, basically. Mm-hmm. And they were wonderful. I mean, they really, really helped us along. And we saw this particular therapist through our entire second pregnancy.
I bet that was so helpful
which
to have
was
that.
Hugely
we
helpful.
Had to and was private therapist or this was
private.
Group therapy? This
private. Was private. Yeah. I mean, the whole time we're dealing with another pregnancy and the fear of every single thing that could go wrong along the way at this point, you know, right. It's heightened by a million. And then dealing with our grief at the same time was really, really hard.
For this pregnancy, you're seeing a doctor now or you're seeing a midwife?
I was seeing, we stayed with the same practice, the same OBGYN practice, but I was now seeing
the
lead OB who runs the practice, the midwife. Has all of the special tools, who's known in the business for being... he's popular in the business. He's a popular OB.
And they know your story.
And they know my story.
And they're going to do everything they can.
Yeah, I mean, you must have been high risk and they must have been, you know.
And that was a big question for us was, do we go back to the same people? We were kind of angry at them, you know. And
Right.
I mean, we knew it wasn't entirely their fault, but we felt like there were things along the way that could have prevented some of this. And it was a big question for us. But the thought of having to go and tell our story to yet another person, which was so overwhelming at that stage.
Sure.
And have somebody take us seriously based on what happened to us. We felt like we weren't going to get that same level of being taken seriously anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So we decided to go back and see the OB who had all the specialty tools, had the ultrasound machine. We had an ultrasound almost every appointment.
Yeah.
Lots of...
Did you buy one at home?
No, almost. You know, I had a...
If we could have, we probably would have.
We had a...
fetal monitor.
Monitor for the first, but I actually couldn't use it. I couldn't use it the second time. Yeah. It was just too scary.
Yeah.
For me.
I mean, I know just being pregnant now, if I could have an ultrasound every week, I would.
Yeah.
This is my first time being pregnant, though, too, you know.
Yep.
So.
But it's a huge peace of mind. And knowing that, you know, having had that now, I don't think I could ever go back to a non-doctor. Doctor who wasn't checking up constantly.
And we requested to be induced. We did not want to go full term with the second baby.
And did you deliver normally or did you have a C-section? Or
no, I delivered vaginally.
Did you see I didn't want to say vaginally? Is that normal?
this is a fertility podcast.
Know, it's yeah, it's going so to come up.
No, I did deliver vaginally and I wanted to try again. I wanted to have... Sure. Somewhat the experience that I was hoping for the first time around, and I knew that my body could do it. There was no reason it couldn't.
Sure.
And I was, you know, this time I was totally on board with an epidural.
From the start.
I was open to the idea, but I still wanted to try for an natural birth as much as possible. But knowing what we knew about our first birth and the complications I had, I wanted to make sure that at a moment's notice, they could whisk me away to the OR and do what they needed to do, which meant that I had to have the epidural installed, the port that they put in, had to be ready to go. Because I remember when my best friend was pregnant, I was there for her birth, present for her birth, and for her daughter's birth, sorry. And the
weird, right?
Present for her daughter's birth. And I remember her having to wait for the anesthesiologist because he was upstairs.
And
doing
they're always
some
somewhere
other,
else. Yeah. They're always like on snack break or something. Exactly. I'm like, can you get him in here now?
They're very busy people. So I knew that
I
didn't
want to. I wonder why they don't just have more on staff.
Right? Well, they're very expensive.
Yeah.
They're very
in the
expensive.
Next life, I'll be an anesthesiologist.
Yeah. If it was men giving birth.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
There'd be a lot of anesthesiologists.
There'd be a vending machine.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You know, this was a much easier labor, obviously, than the first one for so many reasons. But I remember, so she had the epidural installed, and he's like, this is the lowest possible count we can possibly give you, but this is what we'll do. But when, and she, it, I think, so they started labor by, they broke her water. And they gave her just a tiny bit of Pitocin, and we were watching, I think, Flip It, Flop or whatever, one of those Flip It or Flop It.
HGTV.
HGTV. We were just watching it, and her mom went out to get dinner or lunch, and we were just hanging out, and she's like, I'm fine, no worries. And so she had maybe 30, 45 minutes of actual labor pains. But when those labor pains came, she was pushing that button, but there was nothing to come out.
Nothing in it.
Yeah, nothing in it, but she kept pushing it. So maybe just the act was helpful.
Yeah.
But, you know, that process was so much easier. I think from the time they broke her water to the time our son was born was maybe 4.5 hours.
Wow.
Well, guys, I mean, I feel like
it's a heavy story.
But you ended up with a son.
His name is Sawyer.
He's beautiful.
Yeah. How old is he now?
He's about two.
Two next weekend.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Two so next is there, if we were to, you know, to end on this, what would you say? Did you have any like words of wisdom for anyone out of your story? Or
I would say
better words of wisdom.
Don't go into it with any high expectations of anything going perfectly, because it's never going to go perfectly, and you're going to hit roadblocks along the way, and things are going to change, and you just have to kind of roll with those changes and
also listen to your gut and be your own advocate.
Absolutely,
you know?
be your own advocate.
I hear that all the time with doctors and medicine and whatnot, but really be your own advocate and you know, like Hillary said, you know, be flexible with what your expectations and what everything is, but do everything you can for yourself. And if it may sound silly, who cares? Say it. Whatever you
and
need
the
to
research
say,
is important. On that note, do the research.
Binders are important.
Yes,
binders. It's all about binders.
Absolutely, it's all very important.
And. Thank you guys for sharing this, because I think that this is going to be helpful to a lot of people out there. I mean, I think it's people just don't talk about these things.
Yeah. They don't. And they really don't.
These stories are not really in the books you get on childbirth.
No.
It happens.
It does.
It happens in hospitals. It also happens in the natural childbirth center.
Just it happens in the experience.
It happens.
Yep. One in every 160. That's what the statistics are.
That's it. That's a big number.
Well, I'm glad that you got one of the 159 after.
Yes.
You
yes.
deserve that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you guys for coming.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Ooh. Okay. That was heavy.
That was a very heavy story.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. God, just trying to put yourself in their shoes in that moment.
I hope that's the only story I hear about.
Oh, I know.
For the rest of my days, but it happens.
But, you know, I mean, so if we're talking about takeaways from the story, for me, it's, God, what is it? I mean, for me, it's one is get help. Like, right? If you go through something like that, you're not alone, which I think is, you know, I'm so grateful that they shared it for that reason. Mm-hmm.
And they say, actually, it helps them to share this story.
Yeah.
This is over 3 years out, and they say it's still very difficult to talk about. But the fact that they were even able to tell the whole story just now is a testament to healing.
Yeah.
You heal.
Yeah. And there is a light at the end of the tunnel. They had another baby and they were very fortunate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess that's my takeaway in a heavy story is sometimes you still get there, but wow, just wow.
Mm-hmm. And they have a rainbow baby now.
Yeah.
I think that is the term for it. Rainbow baby. If you've lost a baby.
Is that really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for me, a takeaway that I have, I'm looking at it from a pregnant point of view because I'm pregnant and I'm looking at birth coming up. And their story, of course, is such a scary story and so sad. But for me, it's just a reminder to me to stay open and to stay flexible. And, you know, I cannot go into this with a rigid state of mind about how this birth needs to go or how any of it needs to go. We got to stay flexible.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things I remember from my birthing class, I mean, a lot of what I remember from my birthing class are things I did not like because I went to the wrong class. But one of the things they said was that there are studies that show that if you are too attached to the way that you need something to go, you're mm-hmm. much more likely to get postpartum.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, the studies part I could have just made up, but that's what that lady said.
That's so, really interesting.
Yeah. And so it's like the idea that it has to be this way. So the flexibility thing is also a good takeaway. I think your
it's
point is
really
good.
Big. And I feel like I talk to a lot of women who are about to give birth who have a rigid way that they want it to go.
I did too, though, by the way. Yeah. I was like, I must have the epidural. And what if I had like gone too quickly and I couldn't have gotten it?
Right.
You know, so...
You never know. And that's also a good lesson for parenting. Because once that child comes out, forget about it.
All of your plans are out the window.
You have no say.
Well, normally... this is a time where we would maybe, you know, like ask a question from our viewers, but you know, it's such a serious episode. Jamie and I were thinking that maybe the best thing to do is just say, let's create more community. If you had a story like of something like what happened to Sarah and Hillary and you'd like to share it, or on Twitter at Ovaries Talk, and we are on Facebook on If These Ovaries Could Talk. So, you know, please feel free to share the story.
Share your story. If you have any words you'd like to send to Sarah and Hillary, please feel free to do that. If you have questions for them, feel free to reach out. We can reach out to them. We're very close with them. We talk to them. So, yeah, let's create a community. Let's keep this conversation going because it happens.
All right. And on a much more sweet, like somber note, we'll say eggs, ovaries out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.